Happy New Year! It's Garmin Wong Ulrich, and this is your Marketplace Money podcast for the weekend of January 3rd, 2014. We've got no crystal balls, but we certainly can get you ready for a new year for your money. What will 2014 have in store for your wallet?
I'm going to get a job this year after I graduate, hopefully, and I would like to start saving immediately.
We're trying to learn how to break that paycheck to paycheck mentality. We could probably, if we really scrimped, get at least $300 or $400 a month in savings.
Yeah, I think $300 would definitely be a good goal to set and would be quite possible to reach.
My first resolution is to be financially set for retirement, which isn't too far off. So I have to figure out what to do to build my nest egg a little more stronger.
New year, fresh start. Your financial resolutions coming up on Marketplace Money from APM. So this show is about you and the choices you make every day and how to not only get more money out of these choices, but more value. This week in How We Live Money, a special edition of our show.
Carmen.
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 Carmen. Carmen, what's going on?
I'll tell you what's going on. Your resolutions for 2014. We're going to profile four listeners and introduce their goals for the new year. And we're going to follow them through to see how things are going. Also, to offer a hand when needed. Let's start in Oakland, California with Nina. She's 49, a single parent with a daughter who just started college. Welcome to the show, Nina.
Thank you.
So, Nina, tell me, what are your financial resolutions for 2014?
My first resolution, first and foremost, is to be financially set for retirement, which isn't too far off. So I have to figure out what to do to build my nest egg a little more stronger. And my second resolution is finding out how to find greater tax shelters to make sure that I'm not giving Uncle Sam too much of my hard-earned money. And then there's a few other resolutions.
The tax shelter. Only pay what you owe, right? That's my mantra.
Exactly. Exactly.
Nina, let's talk first about you want to be financially set for retirement. What does that mean? Give me some detail on anything you've put in place or numbers you want to see to make that happen.
I think at a minimum, I would need about $1 million. I'm not a big spender, but I'm nowhere near $1 million. So I need to figure out how to grow my nest egg. So I have a few different buckets, if you will. I have 401ks. I have IRAs. I have a pension, and when the company makes available opportunities to contribute, I contribute at the max.
What's the full total of all those accounts combined to give an idea of how far off you are from your goal?
Right. I'm about 350 right now.
In terms of reaching that goal, how much can you set aside, or how much have you been setting aside or wish to every month? Is that number going to change, or do you think, is it something else you're looking to invest in?
It could change, but here's a couple. Another thing that I'm interested in is retiring abroad when I do retire to make my money go even further. So that might mean putting dollars towards something else that I hadn't anticipated at this time.
Oh my goodness. You know what's coming to my mind right now? I'm mildly obsessed with, and I'm sure you will be too once you hear this, House Hunters International, HGTV. Let this be an ad for that. But it's really, that's where you see a lot of folks who are retiring who want to live abroad. But before we get there, because I want to get you there, let's talk about your other assets. So you have those retirement savings assets and you have your home. So how much in terms of equity do you own in percentage wise?
I would guesstimate around $300,000 in equity.
How much left on the mortgage?
Oh, left on the mortgage, I have $49,000.
Okay, so you are in great shape on that house, and you're just paying the mortgage, correct?
Well, I do pay the mortgage, but every month I pay additional, and I know I pay a ridiculous amount in additional that I could be putting somewhere else. I am able to pay an extra $2,000 per month in order to make that mortgage go away a lot quicker.
Okay, Nina, so here's where I'm going to dig with you, though.
Okay.
Let me interrupt because I'm going to dig with you here.
Go ahead.
Why do you want to pay off that mortgage?
I think it's an old school sentiment and a sense of security that if I no longer have that mortgage and the economy tanks and I don't have my job, then I don't have that debt was hanging over my head.
Okay, work with me here, Nina, because now I'm going to get you to hop to another spot. Where is that $2,000 a month coming from?
That is actually from an emergency fund. So as long as there's 10 to 12 months within that emergency fund, then I'm feeling comfortable with funneling it there.
Nina, I am fanning myself right now. Because here's the thing, Nina, now I'm going to ask you this. If the emergency fund is depleted, your mortgage is not your only bill. What I tend to see with, and I absolutely respect old school and I understand it, what I tend to see are folks who do that, pay off the mortgage, and don't save up enough money for retirement. They end up house rich, cash poor, which I know I've mentioned before. I'm leading you to the well, so to speak, Nina. Let me lead you to the well.
And I will drink.
Please. So the tax deduction for the mortgage interest would go away. And you mentioned that one of your resolutions is to find greater tax shelters. But here's the thing. You could reach that million if you put more money into retirement. But what I don't want you to do is drain that emergency savings.
Right.
Because then what?
Then I'm in a bad position.
Then what, Nina? Then what? And I'll give you an example. So here's where the old school comes from, because that's who I was raised by, right? The idea of completely paying off that mortgage. That came from a time when we were paying 17-18% on mortgages. What's your interest rate on your mortgage now?
It's about 4.5.
Beautiful. Beautiful. It's an incredibly low cost borrowing asset. You're borrowing against an asset, very low cost to you. What I would love for you to do is I'd love for you to be able to keep that house, but keep it and also have the money to be able to pay for all the rest of your bills.
Right.
If you disagree, Nina, you tell me. You set me straight.
No, I can definitely do it because, and I know that part of me knew that it wasn't the most strategic thing to do.
Yeah. And the thing is here is that, you know, if you think about how much mortgages used to cost, understand that loan that you have against your home is also a way of sharing a little bit of risk with the bank. So it's a small price that you're paying to, in essence, be able to put your money someplace else while your home grows in value, which hopefully now it will continue to grow. Now, here's a question, though. If that $2,000 a month was coming from your emergency savings, and I'd love for you to keep your emergency savings, where is more money going to come from to put into your retirement accounts?
That money there can be funneled to retirement. And then, so I was thinking some other things to do with that money is I like the 401k that I have with my old company. I was thinking about mimicking that. But I think part of my issue is going back to the tax shelter. You know, historically, I've been saving with the IRA, right? Before I was able to get deductions for that, but now I'm no longer eligible for that. So right now it feels like I have everything that I do doesn't provide any sort of a tax shelter.
Yeah, the 401k that you have with your employer, your previous, let's say you roll it into your current if you like what your choices are and you're not, the fees aren't out of this world. And then you mentioned, so you have another traditional IRA as well?
Yes, I have a few of them.
There is a max that you can contribute every year. And this is one of those things where I hate to give people this news, but when it comes to IRA accounts, there absolutely is a max that you can put in them combined. So the maximums are not per plan so much as per person. Because imagine if millionaires decided, I'm just going to have 10,000 IRAs and max each one out. So there is a limit to how much we can save that is tax sheltered. So as long as you're maxing those things out, you may want to consider then also saving on your own if you need and can save more. But just look at doing it yourself in such a way that you save money on fees. So, for example, a Fidelity or a Vanguard, where you can go to a discount brokerage, have lots of information, go with index funds that don't have management fees. And if you keep your fees low, at least you're paying attention and at least you're saving and hopefully growing your money that way.
And that's good because I have looked at Vanguard. That's one of the mutual fund families I was looking at. I will look at that because I am maxed out everywhere in terms of IRAs, you know, for myself and the 401k. So I'll just have to bite the bullet and go ahead and get some personalized funds to keep investing in.
That's a really good strategy, Nina. But stay with me for a moment. We're going to have a short break and then we'll continue our conversation about your financial resolution. to Nina right now from Oakland, talking about her financial New Year's resolutions. I never asked you this, and this is a very, very important question. How old or what age do you want to retire?
Well, I'm realistic, so I no sooner than 65, because I've got still a good ways to go before I hit that goal. I'm going to go with 65, and you know, if I have to work a little longer, I'll just have to work a little longer.
Okay, and would that be the time that you would like to move?
Yes.
Okay, and you plan on traveling to these countries or to where you're interested in ahead
Absolutely.
Of time, right?
Okay. Right. I'm going to start doing that this year.
Okay. So that's going to be another additional cost for you this year. So here's what I want you to do. Your two resolutions, which you told me in the beginning, one, financially set for retirement, and two, greater tax shelters. So number two may not be possible simply because you can only max out your tax shelter so much. But
okay.
Number one, we can absolutely get you there. Really focus on saving up money for your retirement. Please protect that emergency fund, at least have a year's worth in there, and then any additional funds you can split between bulking up your retirement and a little bit to travel so you can figure out where you want to go.
That sounds good.
And if I check on you mm-hmm. later on, will you be able to tell me that you're not prepaying your mortgage?
It's funny. It's like,
Can I do that?
I know, right? Yeah, I've been conditioned for so long to do that.
And I know you can yes me all you want, but I'll be like elf on the shelf. I'll be watching you, Nina,
right.
And I'll be saying, well, when you write that check, you think of me in your ear going, Nina.
Don't do that. I know.
You can't take the house to the grocery store. The house won't pay the bills.
Right, or buy clothes. Right, absolutely. So, yes, I can go cold turkey. I can do it.
Wonderful, wonderful, Nina. And here's my other resolution for you for this year. Learn some Spanish, some Espanol, so you mm-hmm. can do your travels and mm-hmm. enjoy retirement
Absolutely.
In the sun.
Absolutely. Good advice. Great advice.
Thanks, Nina. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And we're going to check in on Nina next month, see how she's doing. But what kind of money resolutions do you have in mind to begin the new year, 2014, right? Share your stories at marketplacemoney.org. And so we called up some friends of the show as well and asked them what their own resolutions are for this year.
Hi, I'm Liz Weston, personal finance columnist and author of the book Your Credit Score and Deal with Your Debt. My personal finance resolution for 2014 is to get a better handle on our retirement plans. It's still several years away, but we want to get an idea of how much we've got to spend and how much work we'll have to do once we get there. You know, I'm constantly looking in at our retirement accounts and figuring out where we're going. But now that my husband has turned 60, suddenly it's become a real deal. Now it's something that's, you know, in the near future rather than decades away. I want us to have the good, healthy, prosperous retirement we've been saving all these years for.
They are in it, and I'm sure they'll do it. But what's your resolution for this year? Tweet us at Live Money. Next, this year may be the year you get a new job. But first, you got to get past the filter.
It's based on keyword search. And so if you are not aligning your resume and cover letter tools and embedding those keywords, very difficult to get through the applicant tracking software systems.
We'll tell you just how to do that coming up on Marketplace Money from APM. Financial resolutions for the new year, and they range from saving more money to getting out of debt. But for some, the stakes are higher. 2014 is the year for a big goal to turn their lives around. Joining us now, Melissa and Joshua from Portland, Oregon. They live there with their 14-month-old daughter, and they've been really struggling. At times, they've had to lean on public assistance to keep their heads above water. But now that's the past. Things are finally looking up now. However, old habits die hard. Hi, Melissa and Joshua.
Hi, Carmen.
Hello.
Let's just get it all on the table. What are your money resolutions for the upcoming year?
To break that paycheck-to-paycheck mentality. We're starting to make more money. We're becoming more financially secure, but we're still living like our paychecks are going to evaporate into dust if we don't spend our money.
Oh, my God. Well, that's a way to get it to evaporate is to spend it. that's your overall big thing for 2014, right?
It is. We were married 3 years ago, and when we married, our income was only $20,000. We were unemployed, barely making ends meet, and this next year we're forecasting about $80,000 with our combined incomes. So we don't know what to do with our extra income. Do we pay off old debt? Do we start our daughter's college savings account? We're not quite sure what to do.
Well, first of all, bravo for bringing in all the dough, folks. Joshua, are you on the same page, the two of you? Do you feel like you're in this together?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been through the rough times, and now that we're getting into the good times, it's just time to figure out where the money's going to go.
You mentioned rough times, Melissa. You mentioned debt. How much debt are we talking here, and what kind?
The big lump is student loan debt. So our combined student loans are about $70,000.
Oh, wow. What kind of interest rates are you looking at there?
It's pretty high, 6.3% interest.
Now, what about credit card debt?
What about $7,000, sweetie, in credit card debt?
Yeah, it's right around there.
Okay. One question I always ask folks before we talk about getting out, how'd you get into that?
Well, they were giving away free T-shirts on campus, Carmen.
No, don't tell me that, Melissa. But what kind of habits did you guys have that this kind of piled up, or was it just that you were out of work for a while, or a combination?
Well, when we were college students and got the credit cards, using them to subsidize our living expenses, and we thought we'd get great jobs right out of school. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. Neither of us could really find jobs in our field and had to go back to school for continued education. So we lived on those credit cards for a little longer than we would have liked to.
When did you guys start making more money? Give me a time frame.
Yeah, this last year is when we really got into new jobs that are stable.
And Joshua, let me ask you, in terms of the spending, any big ticket items you spent on? Talk to me about the motorcycle, Joshua.
Well, let's see. I got sold that about 3 years ago, I think, and it wasn't a good thing when I got it. I had some influences of the bad persuasion from my mom on some purchases that I probably shouldn't have made at the time.
Right.
So I did not learn my spending habits very well growing up.
Okay, because sometimes it's keeping up with the Joneses, but sometimes it's our own families that enable certain behavior, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so when it comes to spending for you guys, what kind of systems do you have in place to keep track?
Well, I have a spreadsheet that I keep track of what we have and then all of our upcoming expenses throughout the month, just to kind of see where we're going to be from one paycheck to the next. We're wanting to get out of that paycheck to paycheck mentality, so I have a feeling that spreadsheet's probably not going to be working much longer.
Well, here's the thing, Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
You are a bookkeeper.
It's sad but true. I'm a bookkeeper. I do a great job keeping other people's finances in line. But for my own, the first of the month hits, and I think, I have to buy all the food now or we're going to starve to death. Because we lived on food stamps and unemployment insurance for so many years, that's where my brain is still set.
I call this the Doctor Who Smokes syndrome. And it's more common than you think. A lot of folks who are very used to helping and taking care of other people do it so well for other people. But then there's a big lapse when it comes to themselves. It's like a big blind spot. And you're dealing with the reality, Melissa, that your finances have changed, that you actually now have finances to control, your own finances. So it's a shift in mindset, right, that you actually have to really think about your own bookkeeping. Now, Joshua mentions that he keeps the books. Do you guys have, or can you work together for a system that you have a household account that all the bills and the spending comes out of every month?
We're trying to work together, Carmen, but to be honest, since I'm a bookkeeper and since he's got his spreadsheet, that's been a point of contention in our marriage for the past few years, because I think we each want to have control and we don't like the system the other person is using. I'm an old school bookkeeper. You know, I keep everything on paper, and he has this fancy electronic spreadsheet that I don't quite understand.
You're on the same team. So it doesn't matter so much how you do it or who does it, but that you're both on the same page about getting it done and that you both have the same goals in mind. So for example, it may mean that Melissa, if you say, you know what, I'll keep other people's books and maybe Joshua keeps our books or however you'd agree to do it. Because when you're running your household, like being your household CFO, you know, chief financial officer, it depersonalizes it a little bit. And that's one of the ways to kind of get that, as you say, bone of contention out of the relationship is to make the money about the money, not necessarily about the two of you. What do you want together? What's your financial goal together? So when you say paycheck to paycheck, so the two of you, your resolution basically is to have cash savings, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How much a month do you think you guys could put aside in cash savings if you tried?
Oh, we could probably, if we really scrimped, get at least $300 or $400 a month in savings.
That's great. Josh, what do you think that that's feasible?
Yeah, I think $300 would definitely be a good goal to set and would be quite possible to reach.
Once that emergency fund is set up, if you guys, do you have access to 401ks or 403bs like through your employers at all?
We do. We could start one for sure.
Yeah.
Before retirement savings is maybe our daughter's college or saving for our daughter first, but I don't know, should we prioritize our daughter's education over our own retirement?
You are starting pretty much from scratch, right?
We are. I mean, we're actually starting from a hole. So we're in a hole, you know, about $80,000 in debt with our credit cards and student loan, and we don't really know which direction to go.
Melissa, you are 39.
Uh-huh.
Your husband's 27.
Uh-huh.
Women, we do still tend to live longer,
uh-huh.
and we're much more likely to live on our own. So you want to start getting that retirement savings in there because you've got about 25 years or so to save. You're a little behind, but you can make it up. Here's my question for you. If you were to just pay for her school, who would take care of you?
Ooh, good question. Yeah, I don't know. I get what you're saying.
when I ask that question, parents sometimes go, oh, I didn't think about that one.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we all want to give our kids a great education. The trouble is when you give an education to a child at the expense of your needs, your kid is going to end up depending on you.
Yeah.
And that is actually a situation that several million people are finding themselves in now where they're taking care of aging parents
mm-hmm.
who didn't save enough or who put them through school and took money out of their retirement. One of the biggest gifts that you can give a child is to make sure that you are financially stable so that they can start their adult life without the added burden. What do you think about that?
That's great.
Yeah. You're like, woo, there's one expense off my list.
That's a great pearl of wisdom.
Now, here's the thing. The debt, the credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to go to nfcc.org, the National Federation for Credit Counseling,
mm-hmm.
nfcc.org, and you find a nonprofit credit counselor. Because what you don't want to do is you don't want to head over to things that are called debt repair or something like that, consolidation. Nonprofit credit counselors are not in the business of making money off of your hardship.
Mm-hmm.
For a small fee, you bring them all the paperwork on what you owe, give them an idea of your budget, and they can give you advice as to how best to get rid of that debt. How are you paying the credit card debt right now?
We're on the brink of defaulting on those and going into collections.
Oh, dear. So, mayday.
Yeah.
Melissa and Joshua, mayday. Let's do it this way. You ready? Here's your financial resolution prescription. One, you said you've got about $300 to play with.
Mm-hmm.
I would put $100 a month in cash savings account. So that'll keep your head above water and you won't have to borrow anymore should the car break down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay?
Two, take another $100 to $150 to start paying down that debt. Maybe a little bit more than that. Your minimum monthly payments. So you want to check there. If you have money left over, go ahead and put some of that money into a pre-tax, your employer savings accounts, 401ks. But that credit card debt, it may take you a little while before you're able to save for retirement in a full way.
Mm-hmm.
Am I missing anything?
I think that's it. I'm feeling pretty naked and exposed here.
No. Don't at all, because I can tell you this. In terms of success stories, you guys are in a position where you have one of the most powerful things available. You're working as a team. That is nothing to take for granted. And two, you're making money now. You are in control of your money, and you have the ability to determine where it goes and what it does for you. And that's not something that you were able to say a couple years ago.
That's true.
So you've come a long way, guys. Let's get you further. Joshua, what do you think?
Yeah, it sounds great. I think these are all great things that we can start doing right now and get to a better future.
Eye on the prize.
Absolutely.
Melissa and Joshua, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to checking in with you soon.
Thank you, Carmen.
Thank you very much.
So, to reach your financial goals, really helps to have a job, but much of job hunting these days happens online, and it's a software program that decides who gets the interview. So how do you get past the machine? Joining us to help is Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman. He covers the job market for us. Thank you for joining us, Mitchell.
You're welcome, Carmen. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you know, here's the thing. Looking for a job in this economy is a very different beast. How different are we talking here?
Job applicants have sort of been turned into these bits and bytes kind of package for a software program that screens them as they apply for a job. The systems are called applicant tracking systems. Basically, it's what you enter all your information into online. You enter your name, contact information, experience, education, skills. You may be able to attach a resume or a cover letter. Now, this isn't new. I mean, we've had these sort of online interfaces since the 90s. What's different is that in the recession, human resources departments were just in a bloodbath of downsizing. So now you have more applicants than ever, right? Because there's high unemployment, and also everyone can find every job that's available, job announcement, and apply from anywhere. So they're inundated with applicants. They've got to screen them somehow. So they use the systems now to screen it down to a small group of people that's going to be the shortlist.
Right. So it's a system that, you, in a way, you kind of have to know what they're looking for. So what are they looking for on the top level?
It's an automated system, right? So it's looking for very specific things. You've done X job. You did it for Y number of years. You have these specific credentials. The job titles, it wants a certain length of time, not two different jobs necessarily doing almost the same thing, but, you know, they show up as two different entries. The credentials, certificates and degrees and tests, it may want a very specific description or a very specific technical name for that. There's salary. They're going to ask what you're making and what you want to make. Peter Capelli, who is the director of the Center for Human Resources at the Wharton School, explained to me this is kind of like a crapshoot.
You feel like you're in a video game of some kind. You're trying to guess things like what salary should I put down that I'm looking for and not get kicked out and yet not saddle myself with a really low wage. And what is the software actually looking for here, and how should I frame it?
Well, thinking about how to frame this sort of thing, I would suspect that a lot of folks think that they need more credentials than ever.
In a way, that's true, because that is one of the things they're looking for. Unfortunately, as Capelli explained to me, it's actually job experience, very specific job experience that they want you to already have. They don't want to train you and spend the money to do that. So this actually can disadvantage younger workers, people just out of college, because, you know, that's why they're doing endless free internships, to get that bullet points of experience that these systems are looking for.
So give us a little bit more. You know, you have some inside tips here that you found in terms of trying to get your resume, not only just through that initial process, but to have it stand out against the others. What are they?
Well, I had Barbara Bardi walk me through this checklist. She's a certified professional coach for job seekers, and she teaches classes at a local community college. She points out that these systems are persnickety. You know, they're software. They're not humanware. The first thing is basic. It's the words that you use all the way through this application.
It's based on keyword search. And so if you are not aligning your resume and cover letter tools and embedding those keywords, very difficult to get through the applicant tracking software systems. For an example, in the job description, if they're utilizing strategic planning should appear as a keyword within your profile, your areas of expertise, the structure of your resume bullets. It has to be embedded enough. Now, not oversaturation, I want to caution. Is
Mary Strategic Planning Jackson.
Yes. And if you put too many of the same words in there, it can actually push you out of the system as well from overload.
Oh, fussy, 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 Mitchell. It's very fussy. And you mentioned persnickety.
Yeah, it's a real dance here.
So in terms of that dance, one of the things is this reminds me, frankly, of tax filing in the sense that you're filling out these forms and if something's wrong, you get flagged. But in this case, for the wrong reason. So you say you really have to pay attention.
You know, the first advice, if it's a mortgage application or a tax form, go slow. You know, check what you've entered before you hit send. It sounds simple, but it's really important. You know, also make sure that you actually fill in what they're asking for. They're asking for a salary number, not the word negotiable or here's the range I'd like to make at your fine company. You know, so it wants simple. It wants very simple fonts and text boxes and file formats. You know, your resume may look beautiful printed out, but if it's got fancy fonts or color or, you know, embedded pictures, don't put them in and hit send.
Ah, yes, the old-fashioned KISS, keep it simple. And I'll stop
exactly.
Right there. Mitchell, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Carmen. It's been a pleasure.
Next up, a 20-something with some very long-term goals.
You know, I'm going to get a job this year after I graduate, hopefully, and I would like to start saving immediately for all the long-term goals that I have, retirement and planning ahead for the family that I'm probably going to have.
Hey, back up there, big guy. Don't forget the here and now. Our special show on your resolutions continues on Marketplace Money from APM. You know, job hunting for those right out of college these days has its particular challenges. Eric joins us. He's a college senior from Williamsburg, Virginia. He's about to graduate and apply for a full-time job, and he joins us to talk about his resolutions for 2014. Welcome, Eric.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Eric, tell us, what is your financial resolution for the upcoming year?
You know, I'm going to get a job this year after I graduate, hopefully, and I would like to start saving immediately for all the long-term goals that I have, most specifically retirement and, you know, planning ahead for the family that I'm probably going to have.
Eric, you're 21. You're thinking about retirement. Oh, wow, man. Wowzers.
Yeah, well, my parents set me up with a Roth IRA a few years ago, which I found out about when I was 18, so I guess I kind of got the bug early.
You are. You're ahead of the game on that one, and good for them to do that because it does put you very much ahead of the game. But let's talk about the reality of today because mm-hmm. That's the thing. We can plan all we want, but it's got to be start with now. So where are you at now financially? And talk a little bit about just the upcoming year and how you see your expenses.
All right. Well, right now I'm in a pretty good position. My parents basically pay me to be a student, which is really nice. I'm not going to graduate with any debt because my parents set me up a 529. What I'm learning is that I owe my parents a whole load of thanks. But I have a part-time internship, basically, that provides me about $10 an hour for about 10 hours a week that I work there. So I have a little bit of extra income on top of that. But once I graduate, that's all going to pretty much stop. If I can't find a real job, basically, a full-time job, then, geez, I don't even know what I'd do. But for the present, I'm in a pretty good situation.
Right. Well, right, the present. But, you know, when once you're not a student, once you get into the full-time workforce, it is a very different situation to earning money. Now, Eric, you're in a situation that a lot of young folks are in after college that your parents, who are you currently living with, right?
Well, they live close enough that I could go back to them, yeah.
Right. But where you want to work is far away.
Right.
Which is D.C., right?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, thank you, sir. I love it. I love it. I love the hospitality. So, but Eric, in terms of living away from where you want to work, it's hard then to get the job, and then you would have to do what? So let's say a job happens in mm-hmm. D.C.
Right.
What are you looking at in terms of income and then your living situation?
I haven't looked too much at starting salaries. I'm pretty sure it would be between $30,000 and $40,000 a year. And then obviously the cost of living in D.C. is immense, especially compared to, you know, here in Williamsburg. So I would have to probably start renting a place with a friend in D.C., and that would cost a lot of money.
And a down payment, where's that going to come from?
Geez, I don't even know. That's a good point. luckily, if you're renting, it's probably only a month or so of rent, so it shouldn't be more than a few $1,000s, which honestly my parents could probably loan me, or I might actually have saved up by the end of this year.
That would be great, because here's the thing, Eric. Your parents kind of getting you in that mindset of thinking forward,
mm-hmm.
it's excellent, because most young people don't do that. They don't think about mm-hmm. retirement or think about, you know, what it's going to be like when they have a family. But I want to bring you back a little bit. I want to bring you to your current reality, because even though your resolution was to shore up and, you know, your retirement savings, that's not going to help you right now necessarily. Right?
Good point.
So what are those immediate needs? Because what's going to happen is that your income, the money you make from your job, mm-hmm. that is going to fuel, of course, the expenses for your family in the future, your retirement. So without thinking about how that job is going to happen, you can't get at that money, because the money's not going to be coming in.
Right. Good point.
So
I guess I should be putting a mind more towards saving up for, I guess, a down payment for rent on an apartment and hopefully enough to pay my way if I need to, you know, live in the area before I can find a job.
Funny enough, you have come to us with kind of the opposite problem. Mostly, I tend to hear from people who have trouble saving for the future. You, my friend Eric, have a little trouble with the present. So let's bring you to the present. And it's really good to think about it this way at your age. You're getting out of college. You are miles ahead of most college students because you don't have student loans, right?
Yay.
So... Right. No, it's really important to understand that most college students start behind the starting line. You're going to be at the starting gate. So you're ahead of a lot of folks. And that puts you in a good financial spot. However, think about the practical costs of getting that job, which means living on your own. And what would those costs be? And you can estimate, well, how much would my budget be for rent? I'd have to save up first and last month's payments. Would I have furniture? And think about this too, Eric. How much do you want to lean on your parents?
Well, not at all, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not obvious. If a lot of folks would say, hey, why not? I would say this, that you want them to really take care of themselves so that you don't have to take care of them later.
That's true.
Right?
I mean, they're getting up there, not getting any younger.
How old are they?
My dad is about a year from retirement.
They are
up there.
Yeah.
They're right there.
Mm-hmm. And they are going to be on a very fixed income, I'm assuming.
Right.
So, you don't want to mess with that money anymore. You got your gift, my friend. You got your gift.
I did, and quite a gift it was.
Yeah, because if you think about it this way, when I hear from parents who are looking to help their kids, I always ask them, like, how is your retirement set up? Do you want your child to have to take care of you? and for you to think about it as, yes, you could, maybe your parents could help you with a down payment, but that's money out of their pocket, and you don't want to have to take on a burden, additional burden, when you have your own family to take care
right.
of. So setting
right.
yourself up independently helps your parents.
Okay.
Which then helps you, which then helps your future family, and
right.
so on and so on and so forth. So what do you think in terms of your resolution here? So you said you came to me with one resolution. I think I may have given you a different one.
Yeah, a little bit. But, you know, they're still connected. So I guess I scale my view back from the distant future to, you know, May of this year, you know, when I graduate and move out. I guess that's it sounds like a different resolution, but really it's I'm not sacrificing the content of the first one. I'm just making sure that I have all the building blocks that I need moving forward.
You're just shifting focus.
Yeah.
From far to near.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I wasn't looking at near, so thank you actually a lot.
Ah, you're quite welcome, Eric. You know what? I'm going to check in with you later to see how you're doing. Let us know if you have any questions, but thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
Send us your stories and questions. Head over to marketplacemoney.org. Click on the Ask Carmen link, and you can also record your question there. Click on the button just below it, and be sure to tell us your name and where you're from so we can have you on soon. So we've got Eric living back in the present. He's going to be off to a good start for the new year. Let's head over to Maine, where Desti's looking to plug some leaks in her budget bucket. Welcome, Desti.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Desti, right away, I got to ask you, up top, what are your financial resolutions for 2014?
We are really looking to firm up some of our general mechanics of our finances, like readjusting our investment allocation. But I think more importantly, handling our general cash flow and getting a better cash management system and kind of graphing our income and expenses.
What, in terms of, you know, firm resolutions as to having a system in place, do you have something in mind already or a goal or numbers?
We want to kind of do a visual graph of our income and expenses so that we can see the expenses going down each month. And then we're thinking of doing kind of a cash-only system so that we're not pulling out that credit card or, you know, writing checks.
So do you have credit card debt right now?
We don't have any debt.
That's fantastic. But you guys got yourselves out of debt, Desti. So I noted that you guys were in a bunch of debt. Tell us about it.
We both had a lot of kind of silly consumer debt. And then my partner went to Iraq for a year. And while he was there, we just felt like our lives were out of our control. And so the one thing we could get in control was this debt. And so we just really put our nose to the grindstone and made a plan and got completely out of debt. And we've been debt-free ever since, except for our house.
That's fantastic, fantastic. Is this about, in terms of the cash, you mentioned also the bills, because lots of times we can feel like the cash is literally going out of our fingertips at the store, wherever we're spending. Do you have a system in place now that you both use to kind of who pays the bills and how and who buys what?
Yes, we do have a pretty good system for that. Actually, I'm the only one working right now. My husband's mm-hmm. a full-time stay-at-home dad and a student. Okay. Basically, I make the money, but it all kind of goes into our joint checking account, and we both are not splurgers. So whoever goes to the store buys the stuff, but it comes out of our pooled resources, and then he takes care of all of the bills. But we've kind of gone back and forth on that over the years, and right now it works to have him do it because he has more disposable time.
Do you have money left over every month? Just how tight is it? And the reason why I'm asking is because when you have a resolution, one of the key things to do is to actually give it something that you can measure. So if you guys have, let's say, a number at the end of the month that you want left over in cash or you want to be able to put away in your savings, do you have that number?
No, we don't. And I think that's what I need to do next. We have had a lot of success when we automate savings. So we do have direct deposit into retirement funds and do really well with that. But then with all the money that's left over, we do tend to spend it. And maybe coming up with a number is what I need to do.
That's a good first step. What you can do is you kind of plan it all backwards. So you say, I need to get to this number. I need to get to $100 a month. Where is that $100 going to come from? And the other thing I'd say is, what is the goal for this money? Is it the cash money? Is it an emergency savings fund? Is it a vacation fund? Is it to go into retirement? Because once you give purpose to that money, then you have something that's measurable and then you have a reason to do it. Motivation.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Our motivations tend to be big picture, and we're not so motivated by, you know, a vacation fund or something in the moment. But I think that we probably could or should do more of that.
Do you have an emergency fund?
Yes.
Okay. So is it all shored up? You're happy with it?
Yeah, I feel really good about where we are on emergency fund and retirement. And we have some money set aside, too. We have a three-year-old, so we started thinking about his education plan. I'm more interested in saving, driving down our expenses and increasing savings so that potentially I could switch over to doing consulting work.
Oh.
And we could continue to keep a parent at home. So that's just it's a longer-term goal, and it's not very motivating in the day-to-day to keep me from going out to lunch at work.
But in order for us to actually turn our inertia into action, we need that kind of nudge, that little push over the edge. And part of that is really having a motivation that you feel connected to. You want to be a consultant. I would say, when would that happen? How much money would you need in the bank to make it happen? And that's going to be your goal, your cash goal. And you'd have to break it down. So how many years out are you looking in terms of making this move?
Probably 4 or 5.
That's not that far ahead. How much money would you need to, you know, for your monthly bills, and how much do you need to save up to continue working that way? That's going to be your goal. And you'll have to see how much a month would you need to put away for the next 4 years to make that happen. So let's say, for example, Desti, it's $100 a month. Does that sound feasible?
I think so.
Mark on your calendar, 4 years out, take it every 30 days. So every 30 days, this is the balance you have to have. One of the things, exercises I give people is to write down everything you spend, every dollar. And that simple action will get you to process what you're spending. You naturally will spend less simply because you're thinking about it. It's like magic. So for some folks, when the tagging, when the online systems don't work, when the swiping and the categorizing, it doesn't stop you. It's just a matter of making that money actually live and those decisions live. So write it down every month, what you're spending, every single dollar on Desti, both of you. And then can we check in again with you?
Sure.
That would be great. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks for having me.
So what's your resolution for this year? Tweet us at Live Money. So I've got my own financial resolution for 2014 to share with you. I resolve to invest in myself. Now, not in my retirement accounts, but in my health. See, here's the thing. I'm a bit of a workaholic, and I do tend to take care of others before I take care of myself. The cost of all this is some unhealthy habits that are unfortunately going to cost me a lot down the road. Not only financially, but personally. So for 2014, I'm going to pledge to invest in hitting the bike with a friend at least once a week and spending more time planning healthier meals. Because after all, our health is our greatest wealth. And here's one more friendly voice sharing her resolution for 2014.
I am Meg Favreau, and I am the senior editor of Wisebread.com. And my New Year's resolution is to double down on my emergency fund. I'm actually very fortunate in that I'm going to be paying less for health insurance this year. So I'm going to be putting all of that extra money to my emergency fund instead of falling into the lifestyle inflation trap where I take extra money and just buy fun new things, which I've done in the past. It is not a good way to go. I have built up my emergency fund before. I had some car problems and I used it, which is great because that's what an emergency fund is there for. But an emergency fund should not be your only savings vehicle, because then if you do need to use it, and it's there for you to use when you have a problem, it's really depressing when you see all of your savings go away. If you have a really big emergency fund, if you want to dig into some of that money, take it out of the emergency fund and put it into a different account. Because the thing that you don't want to do is get yourself into a headspace where it's like, I need a new dress, just going to take it out of my emergency fund. And then your emergency fund is gone.
That's Marketplace Money for this week. Next time, the cards in your wallet, the scores in your name, the ins and outs of credit. Your questions answered. Marketplace Money is produced by Nancy Fargali, Raghu Manavalan, Candice Manriquez, and Lindsay Foster Thomas. Bill Lance is our engineer. Our theme music is composed by Naren Rao. Deborah Clark is Marketplace's executive producer and vice president. I'm Carmen Wong Ulrich. Remember, always check with your financial pro before you make any big money decisions. Thanks for listening, and let's talk soon.
There's a lot packed into an hour of Marketplace Money. Check it out again on our website at marketplace.org, or take the show with you. Download the show by clicking on the subscribe to podcast link and never miss an episode again.
This is APM.